Blog Talk Radio.
Martin Luther King, we had a conversation a couple days ago about handouts and how these right-wing memes, these Republican memes, have infiltrated the Democratic debate to suggest that, you know, ending welfare as we know it, to, you know, all those kind of things are somehow, you know, great and noble things, when we're not dealing with the underlying problem, which is that there's no economic opportunity there because of insane trade policies and because of Reaganomics. And Martin Luther King spoke to this. Jim and Shane, this is clip number four. Martin Luther King spoke to this sometime back, back in the early 60s. And I thought this was a really interesting quote. Here he is.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
From his speech, The Two Nations of Black America, and it's absolutely brilliant. And the next time some white person talks about, well, I pulled myself up by my bootstraps and my family did too, especially the Bundy boys. I mean, you know, here's Martin Luther King, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., talking about how basically whites stole the West from the Indians with the and didn't just steal it. I mean, murdered the Indians in the process, and did not give any of these benefits to African Americans for 100 years in this country. You know, it's a strong case for reparations or some variation on it, for rebuilding our cities, for doing right after having done wrong for so many centuries. It is a very, very strong case for that. To watch more clips from our programs, hit the Watch More Videos button over here. And please be sure to hit the handy-dandy subscribe button so you'll always be up to date. Tag, you're it.
All right, welcome back to Nation Building Movement. I'm not sure if anyone can hear me. We're having some technical difficulties, so if you can't hear me, I'm sorry, but I'm going to say this anyway. We're going to be on the air shortly. It's raining here. We're having some storms and things like that, but we are going to be able to go live in just a few minutes, so I ask you to bear with me. I do not have access to my studio at this time, so I'm having some technical difficulties. So if you can hear me, please just stand by. If you can hear me, we'll be with you shortly. Please stand by. I apologize for any inconvenience, but please stand by. We are going to get logged in, I promise. Stand by.
Hello.
Hello, can anyone hear me?
Yeah. Yes, ma'am, I can hear you.
This is Norm.
Okay.
I can hear you.
Is anyone else on?
Everybody should be on. I made all of the mics live.
Oh, Brother Kareem. Man, I'm sitting up here and saying, I don't know how this is possible because my screen is blank. It is storming, cats and dogs outside, and I'm just crying. And I'm like, oh, Lord, this can't happen. Okay, so is Brother Gene here?
Yes, ma'am. I'm on.
Brother Kareem, Brother Norm.
Yeah.
Carolyn. Is Carolyn not on? Vernon? Okay, so let me, I don't know, is Mr. Bob Brantley on?
Yes, I am.
Okay, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
All right. Well, Gene, I wanted you to go ahead and start. I know we're running behind, but listen, we entitled this particular production as Economic and Social Systems. And the Executive Director of DOS for ESJ, Gene Gordon, is going to speak to us on those very important topics. As you know, these shows are pre-recorded. Those of you who we've asked to join us, we're asking you to join us and engage with Gene, as I will myself, in asking him questions about economic and social systems as he gives us these very important lessons called Unveiling the Truth. Because this is the part of economics and social systems that we don't necessarily learn in school, but we've learned them through history and, of course, through experience. So at this time, while I'm still trying to tinker over here, thank you, Brother Kareem, so much for making this possible. I'm going to turn it over to Brother Gene Gordon.
Hey, I want to say good evening to everybody, and I'm glad to be on today. We lost 15 to 17 minutes, so that's kind of good for me, so I won't take up too much of the evening. But I'm going to be talking about today the truth of the malfunction of injustice within the social and economic system, and I'm going to be laying a base of the problem, a foundation of the problem that exists. And the problem is so large and has lingered for so long that it will take sustained, large, and targeted policy intervention to correct it. So that's the first thing we must do, is we must identify the problems within the economic and social systems. As you all well know, you know, economics is something that most don't talk about. Other organizations and, you know, leaders don't want to touch on economics. But the number one question we must begin to ask ourselves is, time running out on an economic collapse. The reality of the United States economy, most people think that our economy is in ruin. If you did a poll, that would show 78% of the people really think that we have a problem. Consumer spending is up a little bit, and the main topic of government is climate change. And of course, we've got a change of administration within a couple of years ago. And the rate of inflation is over 77%. It's more than it's ever been within the last 50 years. Are we living a reality or an illusion? They say the unemployment rate is steady at 5.4%. Well, that's based on the Bureau of Labor Statistics, but those numbers are not correct because they're basing those numbers on the amount that really who report to the unemployment office. They're not counting the people, the homeless, and according that Many people don't even participate in the Census Bureau. Some people are not even out there looking for work. During the pandemic, they actually found, you know, ways of making money by staying at home. So those numbers are not correct. However, the money machines are constantly printing money, forking money into the economy, and believe it or not, they're printing money, you know, out of nothing. They're printing it out of thin air. As you well know, the Build Back Better bill, it was brought to Congress, and the Republicans killed that. And most people think that the country is getting back on track, you know, and getting back to normal after the pandemic. The poverty rate has, they say the poverty rate is shrinking since the passing of the $6 trillion stimulus package. But that's not actual fact. We're going to get into the actual facts. The poverty, there's over 40 million people in poverty here in the United States. 40 million people in poverty. That's a lot. So let's get into some fact-checking. Reality of the truth of it all is that the United States has $30 trillion in national debt, $100 trillion in total debt. Unemployment statistics are not correct, as I stated before, and the poverty rate, 70% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. 60% of Americans have less than $1,000 in their savings. America is more divided and polarized than ever before. And they also face three big challenges. And those challenges, I would say four, those challenges are poverty, racism, and war, and climate change. Racism in America, let's just say here in St. Louis, racism is systemic racism, structural racism, and that's the thing that we have to look at. It is structural racism and systemic racism, and how do we solve it? We don't solve it by, you know, programs and things like that. We have to find systemic solutions to these problems. As I stated earlier, the poverty rate, there's over 40 million people living in poverty in the United States. Here in St. Louis, we have a poverty rate of 32% among African Americans here in St. Louis, Missouri. Is it a people problem or a system problem? And what can we do and must do to change it? To understand it, or to understand the system, we must be liberated from the system. And we have to begin to find ways, innovative ways, to break the chains of racism and poverty in America. And I talked about war. You know, believe it or not, the truth of the matter is that America doesn't go to war to other countries because they always use the same excuse, inhumane conditions. They go to war with other countries to gain the resources that other countries have because America is pretty much running out of resources, and they can't, the resources that they have will not last very long with the population the way that it is. So let's look at the system. I'm going to take a break, and anybody may have some questions. I'll give you time to ask any questions. Let's take a social justice and the social institutions that make up the social order. Let's just take academia, education systems. Our educational system, as we well know, is in shambles. The educational system is not really... It's so antiquated to a where it does not allow students who are graduating from a particularly high school, most of them are graduating with a third grade, sometimes seventh grade reading level, and they teach us to get an education and get a good job. Most can't get jobs in their field of learning. I met a gentleman last week who went to college and master in business and got a master in sales and marketing and a bachelor's in business, and he was working as a dispatcher, dispatching trucks and transportation. The institution, as I said, the institutions of learning have become so antiquated. They're not teaching what is justice, money, property, and power. As we all know, the student debt, Biden just forgave some of the student loan debt, but he didn't do it for everybody. He made some exclusions in there to amount of student loan debt that is forgivable. The human labor is being replaced by robotics, artificial intelligence, and advanced technology. And most of the educational institutions are not teaching on how these things are going to replace human labor. And there's a couple of gentlemen who wrote topics about we need a new university, because if you look at the curriculum within a university and colleges, it's based on a social holistic system, and many are coming out, you know, with socialist ideas. And fortunately, I didn't attend college or university. I don't condemn anybody that did, but, you know, when you go to these institutions of learning, you come out with such biased, you know, decision-making, and you become biased in, you know, decision-making and things like that, and you gain this understanding that what you were taught in college or university, this is what stands. But if you look at our high schools and grade schools, there's no black history on who we are and where we come from. There is not one book within the educational system that teaches on the advancement of civilization that was done by African people and black people. There's no education on that at all. And I think this is where racism really plays a part, because it's a lack of understanding of who we are and where we come from. So the educational system is not working for, you know, innovative an evolution that the world is going to. The educational system does not work. Let's look at the criminal and justice system. These are social systems that make up, you know, social institutions that make up the social order. When we look at the justice and the criminal justice system, it pretty much, you know, they don't teach what is justice. And when we talk about justice, we can't just look at justice as being the rule of law. Justice is more than just the rule of law. Let's say racism within our legal system. To give you a prime example, I speak of St. Louis because this is where I live, but, you know, here in St. Louis we have, I know of 35 who have been convicted of second-degree murder and first-degree or second-degree aggravated assault, along with other things. And you got 35 people who have been indicted for second-degree murder on criminal action that are out here freely walking the street. So we have a malfunction within our criminal justice system. Mass incarceration rate of people of color. There's a criminal justice system that really, I don't say need to be reformed, it need to be transformed. 45% of those who released out of prison return back to prison. So judges and prosecutors and defense lawyers have to be re-educated. So those are some of the things within our social institutions that has to be changed. We also have to think about, you know, the injustice within the health system and healthcare system. There's a major injustice within that system also. So those are some of the things that we have to take a look at. How do we change it? You know, we have to look at ways to really get into these systems and begin impacting policies that have been put forth before us that's causing, you know, problems within our society and our communities. Economics, if you ask the average person, what is economics? And many can't tell us. Well, economics is production and consumption, which makes up a free market system. It's producer of goods and services. It's the gross domestic product, and it entails input and output within the economic system. Production of goods and services, the economic realities. It's a two-factor. There's labor and capital that goes into producing a product into production. There's not just one form of input, which is labor, but there's two forms. It's labor and capital. 90% of the capital is owned by the top 1% of population. Now, when I say capital, when I mention the word capital, most think that capital is upfront money to start a business or based on past savings. Well, capital is a lot more than that, and I'm going to get into that a little later. Today, people want higher wages for human labor. 70% of the wealth is income come from productive capital, not labor. Okay, what is capital? Capital is anything used to produce marketable goods and service. It can also be considered as forms of private property and money. Capital is things like producing land, real estate, it can be robotics, it can be a brand name, it can be a patent or copyrights, anything that produces, used to produce marketable goods and services, that is capital. Capital is not just upfront money or just past savings to do anything. But I want you to understand something, that most of the assets in America, most of the capital assets in America are owned by corporations through ownership of stock. Capital assets, we're not talking about workers, papers, or raw material, computers, machines, 18-wheeler trucks, buildings, anything that produces income. Producers of goods or services considered as capital. Now, the British common law, which is American, that's what the American common law is really based on, is the British common law, and on down to the Roman law, defines producer goods. Producer's good is called goods are called producer goods. These are goods used to for production of the goods, machines, factories, and things like that. What is property? And what I'm doing is, many of you probably have heard of this before, but I'm laying the foundation to get an understanding of what DOSBESJ is all about and what we're doing. What is property? The common law defines property as a bundle of rights. Property is not the thing that you own. It's not your car or a building that doesn't produce any income or anything like that. The thing is not the property. Property, and the common law defines property as a bundle of rights, including the right to possess, to use, to lease, to subdivide, even to destroy if you want it, and to receive all that the thing owned produces. That is the property. Now, I'm going to explain to you a violation of shareholders' private property rights, and that's what most people say. Well, I can own some capital, I can go out and buy stock, but if you looked at the way that a share of a stock is actually distributed to the shareholder, 50%, just imagine a pie, okay? I'm going to break it down in three sections. 50% of that share goes to state and federal corporate tax, employee share tax. 40% of the other half goes to financing the growth of the corporation. And the last 10% is income earnings to the shareholders. You're getting 10% of what the share actually produces. And once you start receiving the 10% of that share, then you have to pay taxes on it. To say a $500,000 capital estate will merely cost you only $50,000 if you got what the share actually produced. Now, how did that become corporate law? That became corporate law during Henry Ford and the Dodge. Henry Ford, believe it or not, many don't know that Ford and Dodge were once partners in the Ford Corporation. And Dodge went to Ford and said, it's in the Michigan Supreme Court. Dodge went to Ford and said, I want my share of the profits. And Ford said, well, you can't have your share because 50% has to go to taxes, 40% has to go to finance the growth of the corporation, and then you get your part. And Dodge sued Ford, and the Supreme Court ruled in favor of Ford, and that's how it became corporate law on how shares of stock will be distributed to the shareholders. And then Dodge went out and started the Dodge Corporation. Okay? Let's say back in the United States Constitution in Article 1, Section 2, enslaved people were described as three-fifths of a human and labeled as property. They did not get what they produced. That went toward the slave owner. But why did they call us three-fifths of a human? Because being 100% of a human, you can't be considered as property. Okay, now, John Locke, he said life, liberty, and the pursuit of property. It was Thomas Jefferson that changed it because he was a slave owner. He said life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But in all actuality, in the beginning, it was John Locke who said life, liberty, and the pursuit of property because they understood the powers of property and what it means. So I'm going to take a quick pause right there. Is there any questions so far?
Yeah. Carolyn, not alone from Bridgeport, Connecticut. Can anybody hear me? Carolyn Nazon from Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Yes, Carolyn, we can hear you.
Yes,
go
ma'am,
ahead.
We can hear you.
Okay, you broke down on peace on education. I just want to deal with that for a moment. As you was writing, I was talking. And you talked about as you was breaking down the various systems, I just hope you like to focus on education for a moment because one of the key factors here in the entire country is dumbing down the communities and the poor communities, the poor and disenfranchised community. And it's not that they don't have the funding for it. The funding is the political setup, as I call it. Funding comes to this city. We got $101 million from the disaster relief funding here. I live in Bridgeport, Connecticut, by the way. My name is Carolyn Nolan in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And I just want to deal with this education piece for a moment because it's very dear to my heart. This system, we talked about the system. The system as we know it in America is created to keep people, so many people at the bottom. And unless we change the system, we're going to be talking about this stuff for the next 10 years, but the system can be changed. It can be changed because the preamble to the Constitution of the United States are the powers invested in the people. And when the people rise up against the government, there is no government. So we the people, we have to rise up against this nonsense. One of the questions that you had, you said, how do we change this? We change it by mobilizing ourselves, talking to people, waking people up from that slumber sleep. I'm thoroughly convinced that you broke down the percentage as well. I've been listening. I was suggest and let me note that 80% of people in the inner cities are what we call sleepwalkers. You have to wake them up out of that slumber sleep that they're in. And the system is designed to keep them in that fog. If you once you start waking people up, there's power in numbers. And so we have to start by waking up the slumber of sleepwalkers is walking around here in the United States. Whether you're in St. Louis, Texas, or Bridgeport, Connecticut, the problem is the same all over the United States in the inner city. And it's not that the funding is not there, the money is not trickling. It never trickles down. As I was in Bridgeport, I don't know how much money you got in St. Louis. We got $101 million for this app for coronavirus money. Then we got another $138 million for infrastructure. And every time I ride down the streets, the money is fixing the same hole they've been fixing for 10 years. That's a $5 million. And I go in the inner city in the poor neighborhood, there's another detour. Go around. That's more money. These white boys, and I don't mean to make it a racist, I mean, it is racist. Race matters. Because you touched on that, you're going to touch on it for a little bit. These people are walking away with millions of dollars of contracts, fooling the people because people have sleep. Now, we change that by waking and starting to wake up people. Now, we can talk about economics because money matters. But until you wake up these sleepwalkers, And I believe that it can happen by doing what you're doing right now on the radio, going out in the community, talking to people, having town meetings, to let people know. Once you start waking up, then you would get a rumble in the jungle. So if
we're gonna get into the solution. Right now, I was just laying some of the problems out, and then St. Louis also just received, some of that stimulus money for education. But here's the thing is that, they can get all the money that they can get. But the thing is education, whether is it really empowering the students or is it enslaving the students with the education of curriculum and the curriculum that they're teaching is not empowering the people, is really enslaving the people. So we have a problem within the educational system, and we're going to get into the solution to all of the problem. And I agree with you 1,000% that what we have out here is people who are walking upright who are mentally and educational dead because they don't understand the system that has been they've been dealt with, and you got the youth who are angry at the system because of what is at dealt them. So we're going to get into how we can solve this problem, and like I said, we have to go and really begin to intervene within the policymakers and the policies that have been impacted our lives, and predominantly, in the black community. I mean, when you talk about racism, I mean, man, you can go there. We can be here for weeks talking about the structural racism, but you have to begin to look at the dollars and the cents that it took to design this. It cost government a lot of money. They invested a lot of money into redlining and housing discrimination, and so we have a case, and I'm going to get into that a little later, but let me get back to, I'm just laying the foundation of the economic system.
One of the things that you said when you were dealing with education, you say you have kids, young people graduating from high school with a seventh grade education. Now, when I was going to school, if you didn't pass the fourth grade, you stayed back. You didn't get promoted to the fifth grade, and you had kids that would sit up in school for 2 years until they passed, because we had teachers that shit. We had teachers
that's by design, because in during the Bush administration, he passed legislation that said no child left behind. So that's when it all started, when he came up with no child left behind, meaning that you just pass them on. You got to pass them on and get them out of here. So that's my point. It's all by design. But let me get back to let me get back to property. I was talking about property. We have to understand what is property. In the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, in Article 17, it states everyone has the right to own property along as well in association with others. No one shall be arbitrarily deprived of his property. But there's no nation on earth that is exercising that. And that's where we're coming in at. Nobody's exercising that right to own property. Now, it's not mean, though, you can own a car or you own, a house. That's not the property. See, they understand what we don't understand because we are so distracted with other things and we're not paying attention to what's really going on in the system, okay? Ownership of capital in American economy in colonial days was in the top 5% of wealth holders. Today, it was in the top 5% because land were what? And back in there, you had slavery, you had tours. So ownership of capital in American economy in the colonial days was in the top 5% of wealth holders. Today, in 2022, two centuries later, ownership of capital in American economy is in the top 1% of the population. After the Civil War in 1863, free slaves owned one half of 1% of the nation's wealth. Today, we own 1.5% of the nation's wealth. So we haven't really grown much at all. We have not progressed, and we cannot continue to go on living thinking that we've made progress. You know, you hear politicians and leaders saying we're making progress. No, we ain't. But land was the dominant form of capital back then. The Homestead Act of 1862, Abe Lincoln, was in the land frontier. We all know the Homestead Act, where he gave millions and millions of acres of stolen land to white settlers and for free slaves, immigrants to go west of the Mississippi and start the agriculture revolution. And that's what Dr. King was mentioning when this segment first started. He was talking about, how they gave millions and millions. That was under the Homestead Act. You know, the promise made and broken was 40 acres and a mule. It was a form of redistribution policy enacted by the U.S. Now, Abe Lincoln did not enact this policy of 40 acres and a mule. It was enacted by Union General William T. Sherman. He was a field order 15. The demand was actually made by a group of black ministers out of the South. 400,000 acres of confiscated Confederate land was, after Lincoln's assassination, was given to blacks down in the South. It was confiscated. After Lincoln was assassinated, President Andrew Johnson reversed Sherman's order, giving the land back to the former Confederate owners. So the land was actually owned by the Confederate soldiers who was out fighting the Civil War, and Sherman gave that 400,000 acres to freed slaves, but when they came was fighting the Civil War, those Confederate soldiers, they wanted their land back. And that was called one of the biggest gotchas in America. Whether T. Sherman knew that they were coming back for their land after they fought the Civil War, if he knew that, I don't know. But that was the biggest gotcha in America. The reversal left many free slaves homeless, powerless, and with only a few, but to become sharecroppers, often working for the former slaveholders, land stolen and taken from the Native Americans. Now, we have to begin to look at labor versus capital. Labor versus capital. When this country was formed and founded in 1776, 98% of the production was pretty much through labor. Of course, it was slavery, cotton, you know, where it was. 98% of the input of production was through your labor power. Well, in 2022, up until today, that reversed. 98% of the input of production of goods and services done by capital, and less than 10%, you can say 10% is done through labor. American economy powerhouse in 1776, before taking the number one step in building a political democracy, America built an economic democracy. As I say, free labor, slaves picking cotton. Cotton was king. Land, cotton trade was the source of building America's economy. Major corporations and institutes and elite empires were built off of the backs of slaves. Cotton was king.
Okay, now put a period right there. Could you put a period there for a minute?
Yes, ma'am.
You talked about... when you went back to talk about the Homestead Act and William Sherman and the 400 acres were given to blacks. And after the war, the Confederate wanted it back. But I want to go back one more, maybe 50 years prior to that. The reason why you talked about, do you live in St. Louis or New Orleans?
St. Louis.
Because New Orleans used to be the richest city in the South at one time because of cotton, king cotton. Now, when you talk about the production, we weren't considered, see, the whole system has to be redone because they weren't talking about us at that time because we were considered to be property. The reason why they had all of this wealth because they had their slaves. We were part of that 5% of their wealth because they were slaveholders, but we were their property. Because black, when they wrote the Constitution, they weren't talking about us because we were considered to be property at that time. The problem that we're having today is that if you look at it from a psychological standpoint, we are still slaves. Because the money that we talked about, the trillions of dollars and the packages and stimulus packages, but it's not trickling down to the poor people. But the people at the bottom are the ones that's holding up the system because everybody's getting richer. You got 5 million, you got over... How many billions of dollars come to the poor communities every month through food stamps, disability, all that, but not one cent of that money stays in the community. It's just passing through. And I see businesses cropping up all around me. And I get in my car. I do it every time. Get in my car, ride around downtown Bridgeport, ride through communities to see what's going on. And I live in Bridgeport, so 2 years ago, it looked like a ghost town downtown Bridgeport. Stores is all boarded up. There was nothing. You out there now. You got all these new businesses opening. And I said, where's all this money coming from? Where are all these people coming in? So I did my own research. And you talked about when the Europeans came over, the early settlers in America, they were given money by the government when they're doing the same thing now. You got all these people coming in here from every country in the world opening up businesses. When the PPP loan came out, those people got that money. Now you have 20 years to pay it back. Some people not going to pay it back at all because they have no intention. Like one person told me that I'll be 95 years old in 20 years. I have no intention of paying. And this person was from El Salvador. So you got all these poor communities that was all boarded. And then you go through there and they're real nice cast iron gates and coming in here. But the money is not trickling down to the poor people that have been here all of their lives.
Okay.
And that's what it's coming through here.
Excuse me, listen. I just want to be clear about the format because we only have 2 hours on the show. So basically, Brother Gene gives a talking point, and he opens up the floor for questions. So please hold your comments. No problem. Just hold your comments and questions until he opens up the floor, okay? And also... there is an option for you to push 1 on your phone if you want to ask questions. And those of us who are in the studio, Brother Kareem and I, we can see if you want to ask a question. But we have to give him an opportunity to get this information out. So just hold your questions.
Okay.
Write them down if you have to. And when he opens the floor, everyone have an opportunity. Thank you.
You're welcome.
as I was saying, is, you know, the powerhouse that was built in, you know, 1776, America understood that before built political democracy, they first built an economic democracy. As we well know, you know, was based on, you know, the backs, was built on the backs of slavery and picking cotton. But there's two forms of social power that we got to understand. Two forms of social power that we must understand, and that is political power and economic power. What is political power? Political power is the power to make, interpret, and administer and enforce the law. That's political power. Political democracy is the power to participate in that process through the ballot, with the vote. Well, what is economic power? Nobody's ever asked the question. If political power is the power to make, interpret, administer, and enforce the laws, what is economic power? Economic power is the power to produce goods and services. The power to produce. Not the power to serve chicken and fish, the power to produce goods and service. That is economic power. Well, what is economic democracy? If political democracy is the power to participate in that process through the vote, then what is economic democracy? Economic democracy means the power to participate in that process. But they did not give us that opportunity to participate in that process to build, to have economic democracy. So what's the problem with this equation? We're given the power to equal access opportunity to obtain political democracy, vote through the ballot box, but we wasn't granted the right equal access opportunity to gain economic power in production of goods and services. Labor input and capital input. Remember what I said capital is. Capital is machines, robots, artificial intelligence, advanced technology. That input of capital to produce production of goods and service makes up 90%, in some cases 98%. 95% of the input comes from capital. 5% of the input comes from labor, your labor, human labor. 1% of the population owns 95% of all the capital, providing 95% of the productive input. So what you have now is you have a few producing for the many. Back in 1930, after the Great Depression, Roosevelt had a war on poverty. He addressed the war on the effects of poverty, but he didn't address the cause. Everything has a cause and effect. And he addressed the effects of poverty. People didn't earn enough income, so he gave aid to welfare. You know, women were dependent of children. They gave them welfare. People can afford to feed their families. He gave them food stamps. Couldn't buy houses. He subsidized housing through public housing. And a lot of this that was done over 90 years ago, this is the same thing that's happening today. Couldn't pay the doctor's bill? Well, they subsidized it, gave them Medicaid. Couldn't educate their children? The public school system. And all of what I just mentioned is the same thing that they're doing today, addressing the effect of poverty and not getting to the root cause of poverty. And through the stimulus, you know, women were getting, back during the pandemic and post-pandemic, they were getting, you know, food stamps, people were getting $2,000 in food stamps, the stimulus, the PPE loans. They're doing the exact same they did 100 years ago. And when you do the same thing, expecting a different result, that's insanity. Let's look at the Act, the Employment Act of 1946, officially adopted the one-factor theory economic policies. They passed, you know, the Employment Act of 1946. They wanted full employment. They wanted everybody working. I think that was called the New Deal. Everybody was working. Government went on to create government jobs. They created 11 million government jobs, made-up jobs. It didn't make any sense where they had people going out to national monuments, wiping down the monuments and cleaning up national parks. So, but they adopted the one-factor theory of economic policy. They didn't look at the capital input. They just looked at the labor input. So, coercive trickle-down economics with taxation and wages, 60% of taxation power to federal, state, and local government goes to welfare. Massive increasing in debt, the national, international, local, state, and personal debt. Personal debt, consumer debt is on the rise. The attempt is to make the economy work when the few top 1% are producing for the many, bottom 99%. And you can go to usdebtclock.org and look at the massive debt that is being accumulated by America. And especially within the black community, we're not paying attention to what's really going on and how it really is going to affect our lives and our grandchildren and our children's lives going forward if we don't do some of that. And what they do is, just to give you a simple understanding on what they do, is that they put machines down in the vicinity with the worker. You got robotics, artificial intelligence, and what they do is they attribute the production, they use the fraud term productivity, and they attribute it to the wrong factor. They contributed to the human labor when it's actually the capitalist kicking out all the production. And as I say, they use this fraud term productivity. So now you have workers who want higher wages for less work because they actually know, well, the shareholder and the major shareholders of the corporation and CEOs of the corporation know that it's not the human labor that's pumping out all the production. It's the capital that's pumping out all the production. So when you go to want more wages for less work, well, they just pack up and move overseas. Pay labor more and more for less work. And why is it? It's just to maintain a halting on this horrible, defective system of income redistribution through taxes. So if you give the credit to the labor, the human labor, then there's a certain standard that they must be paid, and they want higher raises. And rather than enabling every person to literally become active in the way goods and services produce, we have to become active in both inputs of production, not just to our labor. They pay us for that. So unions who are fighting for more, you know, more income, want higher wages, what these unions, we have to go out and educate them. No, you shouldn't be fighting for more wages based on human labor. What you need to become is ownership unions. So they have to be educated. The unions have to be educated. So I'm going to stop there and see if there's any questions about what I covered, and is everybody understanding and following me where I'm going?
Well, where can people learn about this? Well, read books.
Where can they learn about it? Well, you can definitely go on CESJ's website, CESJ.org. There's free downloadable books. You can go on their website. It's a library, so there's information on CESJ.org. There's some information on DOTS for ESJ.org, but CESJ.org is where I would say you would go and learn about it. And, you know, like I said, they got free downloadable books, videos, everything you can pretty much see on CESJ's website. That's CESJ.org.
Do they also have a way of teaching justice?
Do who have a way of teaching justice?
That is, do we have a new movement that will teach what isn't being taught at the most leading and most powerful universities in America?
Yeah, we have Justice University. You can also look at Justice University on CESJ and DAS for ESJ website, and it goes through the curriculum on what is money, what is property, what is power, and these are things that are not being taught in the academia. I mean, and these are things that are essential that we must begin to understand and learn, because, as I said, is the system designed to empower us or enslave us? And as Carolyn was saying, you know, we're modern-day slaves. We're wage slaves, consumer debt slaves, charity slaves, and we have to get out of that. And she was also saying, you know, changing the system. Well, that's what we're all about. We want to come together and change the system, particularly the monetary system that has to be changed. Let's get into a little bit into housing. You know, people can't afford housing. I mean, most people can't afford them. The new millennials are not buying homes today because the wage base is just packed with welfare. If you say I made $70,000, gross $70,000 a year, well, after taxes, which is what I mean by welfare, taking and redistribution, you know, taxes and things, you're at, you know, $65,000 or so. But millennials are not buying homes. People don't have enough money or enough income to purchase homes. They can't take what is produced primarily by capital off the market, significantly mismatch the power to produce with unsatisfied needs and wants. The system has made ready access to a few to finance to get as much capital as they want. Those who have only their labor income, as I said, labor income is packed with welfare, where it's packed with welfare, so you can't really afford it.
And Pete, you're mentioning money, and that's at the centerpiece. Define money. What is money?
Well, that's my next subject. And, you know, get into the world of finance, money and credit, you know, money and credit. What is money? As Norm said, what is money? Money is a yardstick in measuring value, and I'm going to get into that in my next, just in a minute. Well, Simon Cousin, who's the dean of American economists, he was asked the question, what is the purpose of finance? And Simon says, for entrepreneurs, he was asked, what is the purpose of finance? And he responded, his answer was, the purpose of financing was for entrepreneurs and industrial producers who need the capital instruments before they have the money to pay for them. Okay? Need the capital instruments so that they can get the money to pay for them. They need machineries to produce the product and get the money to pay for it. For entrepreneurs and industrial producers who need the capital, they need the machines and the robotic instruments before they have the money to pay for them. Well, that sounds like it's based on future profits and future savings. Well, that was just not for corporations and entrepreneurs. He didn't understand that was for every human being. Every human being is in that same posture. We need the financing to get where we're trying to go, and it could be based on future profits, not past savings. Credit. To buy capital is made only to people who always own capital, who don't need it, and deny to those who need it. You and I go to, let's say, Elon Musk, who bought Twitter. I think it cost him like some 40-some billion dollars. And he forked up, he had $24 billion of his own money. The bank created the other 20-some billion. Well, that's easy for him to do because he's got the money to pay for it. But you and I go in there with an idea, and they look at us like, no, we can't do it. Self-financing or auto-finance is the logic of capital acquisition, and that it will pay for itself in 5 to 7 years. What Norm is talking about is, you know, what is money? Is it just fiat currency as we know it? As I say, money is only another social tool. There are four types of money: fiat currency, fiduciary money, commercial bank money, commodity. There's financial transactions that take place with no money ever, you know, transferred. It can be contracts and things like that. And as I say, money is a yardstick in which you can measure value. Is there any questions so far?
What is the yardstick would be the best thing given the modern economies in the world?
Well,
how would you measure the units of money? Would you do it where with the Federal Reserve just creating money for things that don't pay for themselves? Or what?
No, absolutely not. And that's what's happening today. Money is being created with no backing. I mean, it's being created out of thin air. They created money, and it's all backed by government debt. But if you and I did that, you know, got a machine and start printing money and putting it out in the economy, then you and I would go to jail for counterfeiting. That's equivalent to counterfeiting, and that's exactly what the Federal Reserve is doing, is that legal counterfeiting. They're printing money that's not backed up by anything but government debt. Future taxpayers that will pay this enormous debt that is constantly going up and going up. And not to avoid Norm's question, but I know where he's going. He said, how would you measure, you know, the unit and the yardstick? And Norm always says it's a great way, and if you think of it, I'm not going to go into the depth of it, but he said money can be measured by the kilowatt hour. I mean, the kilowatt hour, such as electricity, and the reason he says that is because if you look at all the war machines and the robotics and artificial intelligence and all of that is electricity is used. So that's a more sustainable way of measuring money is through the kilowatt.
Doesn't the price go down as they invent more effective means of generating electricity, which can be used for robots, artificial intelligence, and many other things?
Yeah, exactly. So why not do it when we measure money? It makes sense to me, but as I said, you can go really, really deep into it, but it makes a lot of sense, but I don't want to really go deep into it. But what we have to do is change the system. And what DASPE, ESJ, and CSJ, we come up with a solution to the problems I just put forth today. You know, we have to change the system.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, this again, you know, for me, from the for the common, everyday, working man and woman. And getting this new understanding of what is community and what is property. So now we pretty much know, those of us who are living it every day, we know what poverty is. We know what racism is. Economically, we know what racism is. We can walk out of our doors and look at our communities, look at our infrastructure, look at the lack of businesses, this, that, and so on. So for DOS for ESJ, what is it that we can do or start doing that can make a difference in how not only the educational span of understanding money, but what can we do now in our cities, you know, in our states? Because that was something that I read from the St. Louis Council of Community Boards that said cities have to find innovative ways to include rather than exclude voices of the people who are affected by their policies.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's definitely what we have to do and what we have to do today, because here's the problem within our communities and communities of color and also rural communities, that there's no continuity within the Black community. Every generation has to start from scratch. I mean, because there's not continuity. So what we have to do, cities and states will have to become incubators for innovation. And we just accomplished that. We just, you know, had legislation passed in the Citizen Development Cooperative, the first that's ever been done in the country and the world. I mean, that's an innovative approach. You know, people are excited in St. Louis about the development that's going on in any other urban city. What it is gentrification. And what we just accomplished with the Citizen Land Development Cooperative is that we can to redevelop cities, urban cities, and the citizens have an equal voting share of ownership within the development of the community. So what we have to do, and I was looking at the structure of the Citizen Land Development Co-op. Is somebody saying something? So that's what we have to do. City and states will have to.
Gene, where's the money going to come from for the Citizens Land Development Co-op?
Well, the money would come from the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve has the powers to create money for private sector growth. So the money for the development will come from the Federal Reserve to create the money, and it will be backed up by real assets. You know, it would not – go ahead.
Have they ever used their powers to create money, which is right, to enable the poor to get richer?
No, they created money for the richer to get richer, and that's what we have to go and get them to do is to create money for the poor to get richer.
In other words, the 1%, you're saying that the 1% gets most of that money, but there's a catch to this, because the economists teach you that the way to finance growth is out of the past savings, and the rich have that. And they have it, so they also have access to new money through the Fed. But the poor don't have past assets or savings. So you need a system that can determine how much growth does the economy create every year. And you know that it was about $4 trillion for new capital formation that will displace many jobs with automation, okay? Now, in that, the Economic Democracy Act, you have mentioned that, which is something that I thought you were going to be mentioning. But
well, I was going to get to that. That was the solution to the problem, but go ahead.
Right. So if you take the $4 trillion and divide it by the population, that comes to about $12,000 per child, woman, and man. $12,000 in recent years. It may be bigger than that. It could be bigger than that. Okay, because what this would do is reduce costs for the production of things, services, and goods that are produced. So you'd have markets, not just in America, but throughout the world. Now, if every child born today would be able to get, let's say, it came to about $12,000 per child. So if we're going to be modest and say $10,000, then a child born today, by the time they reach the age of 18, would have an income from dividends. They'd be able to buy shares every year. Now, you have to pay back the shares out of the future dividends initially, which may be 4 to 7 years for it, but each year it would be there. And by the time that child would reach the age of 18, they'd get an income from dividends of over 18,000. And they'd have $190,000 in assets by the time of 18. By the time they reach 65, under the same figures, they'd have an income. That child, starting from the most poor family in America, would be getting $88,690,000 in assets. So the point is, if in fact we're getting serious about ownership and we believe that it shouldn't be for the few, but it should be a fundamental human right, as you pointed out in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, then we got a different system to talk about. It's not communism, it's not capitalism, because in both systems, or even socialism, because that concentrates power in some of the people, as you can see in the world. And if the DAS can now move beyond the thing that they got into law for land, the Citizens Land Development Co-op, which is a great idea, because every citizen of Missouri now has the right to own the land, but you got to get the money. And the St. Louis Fed just said is not going to do it the way they've been thinking in the past. So then the question is, where's the people power, the peaceful people power that can organize in such a way that Fed will do what it should be doing?
Yeah.
Okay, Norm. So we're not going to monopolize the show. I want to give, because we have some people here we haven't heard from, and I want to make sure they have an opportunity to ask a question before we get too far into material. And I know the show may run over a few minutes. So I know we have Bob Brantley with us. We have Vernon with us. We have Kareem with us. We've heard from Carol and we heard from Norm. So if you all have a question, please take this time to ask your question.
Yes, this is Brother Vernon. Peace and blessings to everyone. And Brother Gene, thank you so much for your breakdown of the situation as it stands. I know you said you're going to get into solutions, but I want to make sure that I've summarized all that I heard accurately so far. I heard you say, and you can correct me if I'm off base, but I heard you talk about property. Property is what would enable us, anything that we can have or attain that would enable us to be able to produce. Is that correct? Is that a correct summation of that?
Yeah. Well, property is not the thing that you own, but it's the powers and rights over the fruit of what the thing produces. So if it doesn't produce anything, that's not the property if it doesn't produce anything. But it's the powers and the rights of what the thing produces. That's the property. That's the true meaning of property. Property is not the thing that you own. It's the power and the rights over the fruit of what the thing produces. So if it doesn't produce anything, it's not really the meaning of private property.
Right. Now, that stood out to me because in many instances, we don't necessarily think of ourselves as producers. So we actually have access, which is another key word that what you were saying brought up to me. We don't think of the things that we have access to as means of production. We don't think, because we don't think of ourselves as producers,
exactly.
We don't think that the talents and gifts and things that we actually are in possession of are actually means of production. We are empowered by what we have, but we just don't realize what we have. So one, I wanted to make sure I was clear in including all of that, because we have access to what we don't realize we have access to. And then when you use that for the means of production, another thing we don't think about is control. I heard in all of what you're saying that what could motivate us in our action moving forward is thinking about how to and what we can control. It's not enough just to have access to something that could be good, but for us to get in control of it in our strategizing and our coming up with solutions, those two things have to be in the forefront.
Yeah, correct. And the thing is, Vernon, is that look, we have to get out of this processing mentality. We have a processing mentality today. When is my lunch hour? When do I go home? When is my vacation? We have to become creators and not processors. And the question is,
absolutely,
how do we get into the production of goods and service? What produces goods and service? Because we don't have past savings. As I mentioned earlier, you know, 60% of all Americans have less than $1,000 in their savings. Now, when you talk about, you know, black people, that's probably 80 to 90% only have less than $1,000 in their savings. So the question is, how do we get to own the capital, the new robotics, the artificial intelligence? It shouldn't be not based on past savings. And what Norm was saying, Article Section 13.2A of the Federal Reserve says the Federal Reserve has the power to create money for private sector growth. And the key is to buy bills of exchange. Bills of exchange means through promissory. It can be paid by future savings and future profits. So what they're now doing is they're creating money for government that's backed up and expected to be paid by future taxpayers. Well, that doesn't just apply to government. That applies to us also, is that they can create money so the poor can become richer and stop creating money for the richer to become rich. And that's how we can get access and obtain some of the capital that's being created in the new advanced technology, rather than going on Wall Street, which is nothing but a gambling casino where they speculate on what could happen and what not actually is. So the question is, how do we get access, equal access opportunity to own some of the capital? Well, they finance consumer items. I don't care if your credit score is 500 or less. They're going to find a way to finance you a vehicle and charge you 27 to 30% interest. They find a way for consumer items to finance consumer items. Well, if there's a way that you can finance capital where each person can have some capital ownership, and it's through capital credit. And what Norm was mentioning, how capital credit is formed, but that's going in depth into more of how the technicalities of it, and you can learn more through Justice University and learn how that's done, and it's backed up by credit insurance. I mean, you know, but you have to also look at the feasibility. Is there feasibility in doing so? Well, yes, there is, you know. Government can be, you know, reinsured. There's insurance on it. So it can be done. So what we're introducing is a new paradigm, a totally new paragraph. Can it happen? Yes, it could. Yes, it can happen. And what Norm is saying is that descendants of American slaves should be the pioneers leading this. I mean, if you look across the board, what else is out there that they're demanding? That the Economic Democracy Act, and that's what we're pushing for, is the Economic Democracy Act, where you're giving us equal access to the capital ownership. If you look at, you know, I know this is not about who's Democrat or Republicans, but going back and looking at the 1980 Republican Convention, they were all for broad-based ownership. Reagan was a big on broad-based ownership, and that's where we have to become more, we have to become more understanding of broad-based ownership. And like I say, we have a valuable case, but what we have to do is we have to begin, we see what the problem is, okay? We have to identify others wanting to fix the system, in particular the monetary system. You know, this is something you probably never heard of. It's new. I mean, we can't continue on doing. If anything that's going to be corrected and going to be just for us is that the monetary system has to be addressed. Systems has to be changed, and that's what we're all about, is changing systems and policy that have been put in place and as barriers to keep people from, you know, becoming owners, and we have to break down those barriers, and Norm is saying it's going to take people power, you know. The Federal Reserve, he mentioned about the Federal Reserve, you know, raise interest rates, they're talking about raising interest rates 1%, you know. That, you know, I don't worry about that, but because by the time we get to the Federal Reserve, you know, maybe that will have changed by that time we get to them, but this is a Federal Reserve has the power to create money, to fix up our urban cities, to build our urban communities. And we rightfully have a case. I mean, our forefathers fought, died, and bled for building this economic powerhouse that America is today. We're not asking, you're printing money for government, for debt, backed by government debt. You can create some money that's backed up by real assets to empower every citizen of the community.
Yeah, I would also add that in the beginning, we can also continue welfare system for the people at the bottom. You can't just ignore the fact that the welfare system is there, might as well, and we can't ignore the needs of the poor.
Yes, now I add in. This is Brother Kareem.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Go ahead, Brother Kareem.
Yes. Thank you. I want to, first of all, thank everybody because I've learned some things that I didn't know, and I'm going to have a lot of questions as we get into this, but our time is short. I wanted to say this because there's been a lot of mention of the Federal Reserve System. A book that I have studied and continue to study, if you really want to know what Norm, Brother Gene have been talking about when they say the Federal Reserve System, it's a book called The Creature from Jekyll Island, and it'll lay it all out for you. But what they're talking about as far as how they create money out of nothing, out of thin air, like you said, they finance government so they can finance the efforts that we are putting forth. Now, one question I did have for you right now is, and I may be repeating, but what can I as an individual at this moment begin to do to help the effort? You know, that's what I want to know. I mean, as an individual, what can I personally do to begin to help the effort?
Well, first of all, one thing you can do and be a big help to us is to come on and join on with DOS for ESJ and let's get some boots on the ground. The biggest challenge that I'm going to be facing coming up soon is, you know, I'm going to have to go out and educate the community on the Citizen Land Development Cooperative, what it means, what it's all about, and how it will be beneficial to the community citizens. So that work is ahead of me. I'm going to have to build a core group to go out and really educate the community, and we need all the help that we can in educating. You know, as the book says, our people are destroyed because the lack of knowledge. It's the lack of knowledge and understanding, and as I said earlier, how can you be liberated by a system when you don't understand it? So what I call myself doing today is pretty much laying down the problems and the malfunctioning that's within the system, the educational system, the political system, the criminal justice system. We've got a vehicle that would totally transform the criminal justice system. I don't want to go into that now. But, yeah, it's just, you know, all hands on deck. I mean, this to me is we can get the Economic Democracy Act before Congress. You know, I know some out there who thinks, you know, it's impossible to do. Well, they're considered to me as what I call a cat's meow, because there's nothing like it, there never will be, and because you can have the greatest damn idea in the world, but without capitalization behind it, it's nothing. And see, that's what we've got, is that you don't have to, it's not based on past savings. You know, the money can be created to make the poorest of the poor richer. We have to change the landscape and of our communities. I mean, you've seen more young people who are homeless. You've seen, you know, what is the parent of crime? The parent of crime is poverty. So these institutions and our governments, local, state governments.
Can I also suggest that if you could spend an hour a day doing some reading, there are these ideas are not mine. They were the product of a man named Louis Kelso, who was looking for an alternative and wrote several books. Became known, and that's how Reagan learned of these ideas. Well, there are two books. If you go to our website and under the resources section are books, free downloadable books, the Kelso books and the books we wrote. One is called Curing World Poverty, The New Role of Property. Another is called Capital Homesteading for Every Citizen. And these were written years ago. We're going to have a new one out. It'll be called Own or Be Owned. And that should be out in several months. But in any event, the ideas are in these books and also all the Kelso books, so that anybody who wants to know, you know, to be able to explain to anybody, including a Nobel Prize winner, or you can read some of the articles in the resources section, and you'll see an exchange I had with Milton Friedman, and there's also a 60-minute show that's in the video section. So that you'll get some idea of what we're up against. And really what we're up against is the arrogance of the intellectual.
Yeah. And And the thing is, Kareem, I hope I answer your question, but we have to define what is social justice. Social justice encompasses economic justice. In other words, you would never have social justice without economic justice, because what has happened is the elite has bought the politicians. You know, they have the economic power. They use you, use us for the vote. But when they get in there, they bow down to those in power because they have economic power. So you would never have social justice without economic justice. Social justice is the virtue. See, we got to understand this. Social justice is not just out marching and protesting. And to put it in layman's terms, the best way that I can define social justice is what Dr. King and the Civil Rights Movement did. They changed policies and systems.
Yeah.
They broke down barriers. That's social justice. You know, now, what is economic justice? Economic justice, which touches the individual person as well as the social order, encompasses the moral principles which guide us in designing our economic institutions. The ultimate purpose of economic justice is to be free.
Right.
Mortimer Adler says, when a man is dependent on another man for his subsistence, he's not free. And that's what we're dealing with today, modern-day slavery. All of us, we're nothing but sharecroppers. That's all we're doing is sharecropping. And that's what we're doing.
There is something, Gene, that was in that writing that said you don't feel you have space to hold people accountable for your enslavement. And I want to point out that we're not necessarily just talking about the physical enslavement of the African Americans and their descendants. But now we're talking about we're being wage slaves. You know, we have to get up and go to work. And sometimes we go to a job that, you know, we don't want to do, but we have to do this to survive. Look, let me break it down like a fraction for you. If we do not come together under the umbrella of descendants of American slaves for economic and social justice, 20 years from now, our population will diminish by 50% because we're losing 3 to 5% of it nationally in this country every day. We need every man, woman, and child who may or may not even be part of the 1% to galvanize behind this effort, because it is not only freedom for the descendants of American slaves or for people of color, but it's also the freedom of America that is on the line. Because believe it or not, the poor are coming after you, the wealthy. It's a dog-eat-dog world out here, and these people are suffering, they're dying, and the ones that don't have the tolerance of the know-how are resulting to acts of violence. Those who are in political power are resulting to the act of corruption in order to keep the 1% wealthy and the 99% poor, and it's not going to work. So I just want to put it out there, anybody who's listening, anybody that knows somebody, if you know grant writers, I'm just going to say, give them my number, 979-329-2633.
Yeah, and that's absolutely correct. But, you know, we Dr. ESJ and what we're doing with our strategic partners, ESJ, we're the only organization just looking at an economic standpoint, and that's the number one problem in America today is economics. structural racism. We want to help educate people so they can get a clear understanding on what is structural racism. It refers to a system in which public policies and social institution practices and norms work together to consistently produce disadvantage and inequities experienced among black people and racial oppressed groups. We got to end that, and I'm telling you, we have to start going after the systems, the institutions that make up the social order and demand change. If you look at the poverty in America, you got 40 million people in poverty. And it's been 100 years when they address the effect of poverty. But you don't go to the root cause. You have to go to the root cause of poverty. And that's economic. You know, they got all these programs as they come up with, you know, is it empowering us or is it continuing enslaving us? And 90%+ of the people hate their jobs, you know. You know, if we need a second income, and the American government, y'all heard what's the senator in, up there in New Jersey, the baby bonds, they're coming with baby, trying to come with baby bonds. They're thinking about the universal basic income for all, where they're going to tax the rich on capital gains. Well, you know, most of the rich assets and their wealth is in assets, not money. So if you're gonna tax them on their capital gains, then they have to sell their assets, cash some of them in to pay you the taxes. See, all that, we've got a better plan. I'm telling you, the Economic Democracy Act was just formerly the Capital Homestead Act. What we're doing is we're taking the Homestead Act that was passed in 1862, or rather Abe Lincoln did that to preserve the Union. I'm not here to discern that, but I know one thing. Abe Lincoln understood the power of ownership and the power of property, and that has lasted generations and generations and generations after that are still the beneficiaries of that act that was passed. So that was in the land frontier. There's a new frontier, which is the capital frontier, the robotics, artificial intelligence that is infinite. It would go way beyond what the land frontier did. We ain't seen nothing yet. I mean, this stuff is getting so innovative and so sophisticated that we can be able, with this 5G, we're going to be able to go to our cars, look on our windshield, and it's going to look like a damn computer monitor and standing in front of you. I drove trucks for, and I hauled automotive parts. Now they're shut down all the plants, and they're building, they're changing over the lines to start building electric cars, you know. You hear about all these things that are happening within the urban city, you know, people coming in, building new manufacturers, especially in St. Louis. But the number, and politicians are so damn ignorant today. First thing they mention is, oh, it's going to produce jobs, employment. That's all. We have to get out of that conventional way of thinking. Nobody even is thinking about ownership. Nobody's talking about ownership of capital. But, you know, we have to build people power, you know. And what Norm was talking about, the Federal Reserve raising interest rate, that's okay. You know, if they do that and if they refuses us, you know, if we refuse to create this money for this Citizen Land Development Co-op, which I believe they won't, you know, because we've got a case, you know. But if they refuse to do that, then we've got a second plan, a backup plan for that. But it's just, you know, so much of power to the people. You know, they preach power to the people, but nobody ever said economic power to the people. That's what we need is economic power, and that's what we're trying to obtain. You know, cities and states, we have to become incubators for innovation. all this new stuff. God said, I've come to make all things new. This world, we're living in a world of evolution. Why aren't we evolving in our mind and our thinking? We have to get it. We have to educate the politicians, the so-called leaders of the community. They have to be educated. They have to unlearn to relearn, because the way that they've been taught is not the proper way and the correct way of getting things done. So we got a lot of work to do, you know. For Brother Kareem, you know, like I said, you know, we need all hands on deck. This is a big task ahead of us here in St. Louis, because St. Louis is one of the most racist. It's the hub of racism right here in St. Louis. I mean, if you learn the history, and it's the heart of America. I mean, if you learn it, you see the history of this city, and it's still the policies, and the policies are not on the books, but they still are taking place. They're in the shadow, and this is the most segregated city in America, St. Louis, Missouri. So, you know, we got a lot of work to do. It's a tough job, and man, just thinking about it, but somebody's got to do it. Nobody's ever did it. You know, I thank God that we were able to get the legislation passed. There were some that were a little pessimistic about whether it'll pass or not, but we know the power of God, and we know that this is the time, this is the season. As you all know, this is the time and what must be done. We have to change policies and systems. That's the only thing that's going to solve this problem that's facing us today.
Brother Jim, your statement point, I just wanted to attest and bear witness to what you were just saying, especially when you started talking about, you know, the outlook for the future. This same conversation that you're spearheading here is taking place among the millennial generation and people who are forward-thinking like that in and around what's called the metaverse. And that's an area that I'm, you know, immersing myself in, trying to learn much more about. But I just, when you talked about that and talked about the future outlook, it brought that to mind, because we have these conversations without thinking about, okay, where are the forces that are lined up against us heading? And when we start having a conversation about access and control of resources and the means, we have to be forward thinking. So it's refreshing to hear that you are thinking ahead like that, and that we're starting to connect the dots between places where forward-thinking people are and people who are understanding, hey, we got to get the resources that will enable us to get there and get beyond. So I just wanted to bear witness and attest to what you're saying.
Yeah, and
if we don't position ourselves properly, we certainly will miss out on it.
Yeah, and without taking anything from those who already have it, but one thing we have to do, and I want all the listeners to hear me out on this one, we must act strategically, tactical, and smart.
Yes.
That's what we must do. We have to, I'm not out there in the limelight, photo ops and broadcast. No, we have to move strategically, tactical, and smart. We're at war. I mean, we're at war to change a system. Now, we're not trying to dismantle and I want people to understand that we're not coming up against the Federal Reserve. We're not trying to dismantle it. We're just asking the Federal Reserve to do what you have the powers to do, but do it for the upliftment and the empowerment of poor people. Don't just do it for the wealth. You're doing it for the wealth. But we've got a case, because I'm telling you, I can give you the numbers of the Rothschilds on how they were the financiers in the cotton trade, how corporate America, Lehman Brothers, New York Life. So we've got a case. We're not coming as beggars. We're not asking you to print a bunch of money and give it to us. We're asking you in a just way is to create some money so we can empower our communities and build sustainable, safe, and thriving communities. And who
Hello.
Else does?
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, I'm done. I'm done, Carolyn. I think you got about 10 minutes left. We'll leave that up to you.
No, I know you got time is short. I know that I was investing in the people, and the solution to what we're trying to do is to mobilize like-minded people, you know, and wake people up, as I was saying earlier. And that's where you start, you know, waking up the people out of that slumber sleep and get them educated enough to realize the power that they have, we have as people.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm going to read The Art of Change and the Act of Social Justice. Is the malfunction of the injustice in the system. I just proved that. Now what we have to do, the identification of others, go and find others who are wanting to fix the system. Decision to organize as a group to correct the system. Formation and education of the core group. We did a diagnosis, facts, gap, and all of this. I mean, there's so much, you know, that I can share with you. I can give you the active percentage rates of those in poverty, how many blacks expand. I can give you the numbers, but we'll be here. But what I just shared with you, you can go back and study it for yourself. If you want to be super analytical and go study, go ahead and study it. But I just gave you actual facts of how I tried to explain on how the economic system is set up. It's, you know, the world of finance. Many of our youth, and especially in the black community and white community, people want to be entrepreneurs. They want to run their own business. But they have to be educated on business finance and the science of business. And we plan to bring that through a curriculum that we're creating where we educate. What's the difference between an LLC, a S-Corp, or a C-Corp? I mean, this is information that we want to bring to the community. What's a profit and loss statement? You know, what's your assets and liabilities? That's why most businesses fail within 2 to 5 years, that they don't know the basic bookkeeping of a business. So they have to be taught. There has to be guidance there. But we have to get to the understanding of production of goods and services. That's what wealth is. The wealth is not in real estate. That's why they call it real, because that's real property. It produces an income. If it doesn't produce an income, it's pretty much just property that you own. I mean, they said ownership, home ownership will begin to close the racial wealth gap. No, it won't. Home ownership will not begin to close the racial wealth gap. If you want to begin to close the racial wealth gap, then you have to start with capital, dealing with capital, because 70% of the wealthiest income from producing capital, not income from your human labor. So if you want to begin to break and close the racial wealth gap, we have to start with capital. Bottom line, we have to start with capital.
And I want to say on top of that, you know, we need people, because we can't do this and we can't go out and say that we're representing anybody. We can't say we're representing descendants of American slaves and we don't have descendants of American slaves, or, you know, our Hispanic and Latino people, our Native American people, you know, our immigrants, because this affects America, our rich white people, our poor white people. We need everybody. So if anybody is interested in establishing membership for DOS for ESJ in your community, you can give me a call. I'll dedicate Thursday evenings to having meetings with any city or, you know, any group that wants to meet with us, to want to talk about establishing membership and what does that membership do in that particular city. You know, we need to model what is going on in St. Louis, Missouri, all across the country. That is the only way that we're going to get this done. I think we can get it done with 15 states. I know we can get it as a national agenda, but in order for everybody to benefit, it's going to take certain groups to get involved. So Latino people, you know, if you got a Latino friend, you got a Native American friend, you know, you got an immigrant that's a friend, anybody that you know, invite them to your group that you are establishing in your city and in your state, and we'll be happy to talk to them on Thursday evenings. And no, I'll be available Thursday evenings to talk with them about establishing the membership, getting people behind the effort, getting people educated about these things that Brother Gene has talked about and we'll continue to talk about on this radio show, because this is just a two-hour broadcast. But there's so much more in depth. I want everybody to go to DAS, D-A-S, D as in David, A as in Apple, S as in Sam, the number 4, E as in ego. I've lost my words. Okay, S as in Sam, J as in justice, DAS4ESJ.org, and click on the website. There are so many areas of interest that you can get involved in. It's not complicated. You know what your interests are. You know what your talents are. Get involved, because it's going to take everybody, no matter what, economic background you come from, no matter what educational background you come from. We need our young people to get involved as well. You know, let our young people come on and have a voice, because we hear them in the streets, but we don't sit down and have a conversation with them. And so we need everybody to go to DAS4ESJ.org. You can also contact me, 979-329-2633, if you are interested in having a community meeting, and I will be happy to meet with your community on any given Thursday. Call me in advance. We'll set that up. And I'm going to turn it over to Gene now, if no one else had any questions.
Yeah, also, you could, on the website, there's a membership form that you can fill out and tell us what your talents are. Queen was talking about you can contact on a Thursday. I think what we may do after that is set up through WebEx, we'll do a community forum like every third Thursday of the month, where we can all come on from across the country and as a community forum, and virtually we can everybody be able to log in and see one another, and we can just talk about, you know, different things. But as she said, there's a lot to learn. You know, I couldn't really go in depth, but we need to know about the economic and social systems. That's important, that we have to know about what's going on, you know, within the system, and work together to change the system. But, yeah, and also there's a book that I want to definitely recommend to everybody. There's there's a book on black banks that was written by the Kansas City Federal Reserve, a gentleman who worked for the Kansas City Federal Reserve, and it's a moral and a social, I'll get the actual name of the book, but many of us think that the Freedman's Bank was the first black bank. Well, Freedman's Bank was not the first black bank. Frederick Douglass just sat on the board of the Freedman's Bank. But, you know, it's talking about the powers of black banks and community banking. But also, I suggest you all go and read the Capitalist Manifesto that was written by Mortimer Adler and Louis Kelso. And there's another one is A New Capitalist. That's the second book that he wrote. I mean, they say if you want to keep anything from black men, put it in the book. So we got to begin to read more. I mean, with this internet, when they invented this internet, and if you go and study the most successful people, the mind thinkers of America, most of them were self-educated. So we have to take the responsibility upon ourselves to go and do our research, start reading. Once you see this thing, you know, it's not complicated, it's not complex, it's simple, you know, and we just got to start reading more and getting more information. But there's more that's gonna be coming to the website. You know, there are going to be audio that's really breaking down the new paradigm. You know, there's a lot. We're just still in the building process, but there's a lot more that's going to be coming to the website, because some people learn differently. Some people can read a book, and some people can learn more by audio. You know, so we a lot of things we're going to be doing. I don't want to lay it out right now, but a lot of things we're going to be doing in the future.
Including coming to your community.
Yes.
To talk to everybody. So we have a few more minutes. Does anyone else have any questions or comments? We're opening up the floor. Okay. Well, I want to thank each and every one of you who took the time out of your day to join us. And I pray that you're interested enough to join us next week as well, without the technical difficulties, for another, another educational broadcast. This will be broadcast number 4 coming up, and then 2 broadcasts after that, on our 7th broadcast, we're going to open it up to a live audience where we are going to be taking questions from our live audiences. Right now, we want to get the information out and get people to understand exactly what we're talking about and get them enough information to where they can come on and ask questions. It's a lot of information to take in. Again, I encourage you to come to the website. I want to thank everybody personally, Dr. Norm Curlin, Brother Bob Brantley, Carolyn Nah, Brother Vernon Muhammad, Brother Kareem Muhammad, Brother Gene Gordon. I thank each and every one of you for your time and for your efforts. And please don't forget to contact us. Go to Dossie for ESJ if you're interested in starting a committee, or if you think you're ready to open a chapter, give us a call. We're definitely interested in talking to you about it, because we need everybody's involvement. Thank you, everyone, and everyone have a good week.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Peace.
Curtis Mayfield
had his finger on the pulse of society. Even when we as a people did not know where we were going, Curtis musically led the way. One of my favorite parts in one of his songs said,
"People must prove to the people a better day is coming for you and for me."
of economic and social systems, you know, what it's all about, what it's doing, you know.